You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Then I'm recording.
Yeah.
I'm recording there, buddy.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, guy. I'm not your buddy, guy.
All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Triple Radio for May 2025. This is Tim. That's Dave. That's Weiss.
Yeah.
Hello. May 25?
May 2025. It's the 27th in 2025.
5-27-25. 27-5-25.
Are we in Europe? Okay.
If you're in Europe.
Yes, yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
Just so you know, Dave, We're Live, Pal is also a wrestling reference.
Oh, it is? Oh, well,
yes.
Hell.
Yes. All right. Yeah, it because of when Psycho Sid tried to do a retake. He thought he was doing a pre-tape promo backstage, but then he was informed, We're Live, Pal. Because he tried to have him go, let's do that again. And then it was like, oh, We're Live, Pal.
Well, all right. Okay. You just described this podcast as old men talking about stuff. But I think that reference makes us at least 6 to 12% cooler, hipper, more older. Relevant.
Yes.
I think that
Psycho Sid.
Psycho Sid
is what Gen Z talks about.
Absolutely.
God, I hope so.
Everything comes around in 30 years, right?
Yeah.
30, 40.
Yeah. So, hey, man, this month was busy. I was telling Weiss that I do not have a lot of stuff to talk about because I was just so busy doing stuff. And I hate to tell you in particular that I did not get to watch any Andor, even though you're repping over
there. I'm repping. And I still did not make it out to see Sinners, unfortunately. Okay. So
I did see Sinners.
So you did see Sinners? Ah, damn it.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch Andor, Dave?
Yes. Yes, I did. And that is why I'm wearing the shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can talk around it.
Shirt.
Maybe next month I'll be able to talk about it.
Okay. I was going to say, if you're talking Andor, I will actually take headphones off at some point. I plan to watch it. Will it happen? Find out in a month or two.
Well, specifically season, Weiss, you watch season one, yeah?
Nope.
I
started season one. I stopped after 3 episodes.
Okay.
I'm ready to try it again because I've heard season two is very, very good.
And
just.
Yeah, that's probably about all you're going to be able to say about it there, Dave.
And that might be,
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm sorry, I really...
No, it's okay. I came prepared to talk around it because, you know, that's what we do. It's the thing I watched this month.
I'll
talk around it, don't worry.
I was telling Weiss that it kind of caught me a little flat-footed that it was like... You know, it started and then I was like, oh, they put 3 episodes out the first week. And then I didn't realize that they did that every week until it was all out. And I was like, well, shit, now I'm just unrecoverably behind. So now I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I kept thinking I was going to get to it. And I have not even gotten to a single episode.
I had to use being sick all last week as an excuse to just daytime TV watch just on my own to catch up. And
that sounds awesome. I have not been sick for like multiple days in years.
This is my second time.
No,
that's good. I got sick a month ago. I had a voiceover client. I've been waiting a month for them to give me feedback and they did. And so I looked at our past email chain. So they emailed me this past week when I was sick and could not record. Mm-hmm. And I saw in our email chain, the last time that they reached out to me was about 5 weeks ago. I was sick and could not record. Like, I've been, I don't know, lots of children bringing home germs into my house. Some my own children, some other people's children. But
I guess my kid hasn't been sick. He had some allergies, but that was about it. I'm busy because along with, you know, the other stuff I've been doing for the last few months is now colliding with the beginning of soccer season when my child is on not one, but two teams.
Two teams. That's too many teams.
He's on a travel team and a house team. So
he's on a travel team. You're living that life now.
It's a local travel team. Oh, right. It's not like a huge deal. Again, it's like one of these weird things where, you know, you played Little League in SOTUS and there were like four teams, but the games were in SOTUS. And here it's like, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but yeah, I am traveling to different towns. I don't know what it is. It's just, I live in a city or the area or whatever, but I am crisscrossing different towns all day, every day. Like
You live in a major metropolitan area now.
Yeah. So it never seems that far away that I'm going for things. It's, you know, because everything's like about 20 minutes from my house. And like, if you drove somewhere 20 minutes in SOTUS, you would still be nowhere. So it's just, I guess, you know, population density thing. But either way, Dave, what are you looking at?
I hear footsteps that sound way too loud to just be a cat. Jana and the girls are out at a scout event tonight. It seems too early for them to be back. And so I heard what sounded like an 8-year-old's footsteps running on the floor above me. But the only one here is my cat. So I don't know.
All right. Curious. Well, Dave's going to be haunted.
She's up to some mischief up there, I guess.
Before the end of this episode. But yeah, that means double the practices and double the games. It's like Wednesday practice, Thursday practice, Friday game, Saturday game. Though that has not all happened at once because it's been rainy. So plans have had to change last minute.
Are they within the same umbrella organization and thus is there so there's probably the schedule doesn't conflict, does it? Like
no,
he doesn't have to be in two places at once.
No, he's playing under the same club banner, so it's only his second house season and it's his first kind of travel team, so he's building his way up the ranks of I am not going to go, I am not at this point in my life about to go all in on some insane travel team that costs like 4 digits worth of monies to do for the season.
Before you know it, you're driving down to Pennsylvania every other weekend.
Yeah. And I interact with parents that are in those situations. You know, one, you know, her daughter is a hockey player and there are not a lot of girls hockey teams around, so you have to travel all over the place.
I was wondering where the bus was in this situation.
Oh, no bus.
I guess is you.
No, it's not because school sports doesn't start for another few years. He's 10. It doesn't start till he's in like 8th grade. So this is like youth stuff.
This is one of those scenarios, Weiss, in which your child approaches you and says, can I do this? And you have no reason to say no, because like it's a positive thing, a constructive way to spend their time. Yeah. And even though it's going to be a huge pain in the ass, you're kind of just resigned to say like, okay.
Yeah.
This is our life now, I guess. Sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like,
they stick with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, doesn't have to stick with it. It just has to be, he just has to stick with it through the season, I guess.
That's what I meant.
It's just different. Cause we grew up in the middle of nowhere. And here there are, you know, there it was like, okay, well, there's Little League Baseball.
And
that felt like it. Otherwise, you were driving to another town or further to find activities or sports. Whereas here it's like, well, there's I could do town rec soccer with him. There's other like private soccer programs. There's this soccer program. I could, because everything's very close, I could have started him in a club in the town where I work. Or gone to here or there or done this. There's too many options.
Yeah.
But either way, that means I didn't get to watch Andor.
Yeah. Like my part-time, I was realizing, because I'm like, I'm not watching as much stuff, but like I work nights when I'm working. So I'm just sort of like, that's the time that I would be watching stuff. And it's spontaneous. So, But I still got some shows, but yeah, I've got Sinners and a couple other things, but not a ton.
All right, Dave, you have clearance to talk around Andor for a little bit.
All right. Well, without necessarily, I actually have very little to add to the Andor discourse. I loved the first season. You may recall when we did our stuff of the year, it was, I think, second to the first season of Severance for me. In my mind, they were very much sort of even. in terms of some best storytelling I had seen that year. And here we are 3 years later, and it's kind of the same thing. Like, the second season of Severance was just really beautiful filmmaking, and then now I think Andor season two has topped that for me. It's kind of incredible that we I looking at the bright side, I am glad that in essence, so this is no spoiler to say, because this is in all the publicity materials, that each group of three episodes is kind of a three episode arc. And so we are effectively getting four feature length Star Wars movies.
Yeah, that's what I was told that. Yes. Basically they put out a Star Wars movie a week.
Yeah.
I literally see nothing about Andor. Yeah.
It is not I didn't see much. I tried to keep my eyes closed.
Right.
What I failed to put this way in trying to get my parents to watch it when I saw them at Memorial Day yesterday was that I should have compared it to, they loved the Amazon adaptation of the book The Man in the High Castle, which is alternate history story about what if Hitler won.
I heard very Wolfenstein that, but I'm interested. Yeah, Wolfenstein. Yeah, I know. Wolfenstein for our gender.
BJ Blazkowicz isn't. Come on.
So what I should have explained to them is that Andor is a lot like The Man in the High Castle in that it is not a literal historical tale of fascism, but it's almost better for that because we've heard so many stories about World War II that it can feel cloying at this point to just literally retell, like, we know the history, we've been through it. So it's almost better to tell it through allegory. The Man in the High Castle does it through alternate history, and Andor does it through a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It is just a, God, such an amazing story about all the details about a fascist government. So very relevant to, it is relevant and timely. It is all of that stuff. It has great acting performances, really great recontextualizing of the history of a world that we knew, which is something I admired about Andor. I felt like I had to almost knock it points for not being an original story. And I take that back. I think it is better for being a Star Wars story. It is better for being the history of a world that we know, but it's the history that they have never been able to explore, and that is how the world fell into darkness. How did fascism really happen? Which, you know, you could argue was the prequels story, but this is a much more, this is such a much better version of how fascism really happens.
This is the boots on the ground. Like, they don't know all the shit that happened in the prequels, you know, at the, you know, Anakin turning to the dark side. Like, they don't, you know.
And they were still. Are you saying
history has not accurately recorded it, Tim? So that could be. What do you mean they don't know?
Well, how would they know?
Oh, the people, the characters in Andor don't know.
Yeah. It's not like, it's not common knowledge. Yeah, they just like, this happened, and now this is the situation.
Yeah.
Well, also, you know, a movie made for the broadest possible audience versus Andor is made for a more adult audience.
Yeah.
It's not made for a G, you know, like it is not the bright colors of the prequels.
Yes. Yeah. No.
I guess it feels more like the prequels, you know, take place in Washington, D.C. and something like Andor takes place out in like Iowa, you know. Like way out, some maybe not Iowa so far, but like
that's
probably Tatooine. But
that's something else that I wanted to mention, someplace far away
from the machinations of Washington D.C. I guess, but where you can still feel the, you know, what happened.
It is often very far away, but that's also the great thing about it is that I would go get a little more specific and say the prequels exclusively took place on Capitol Hill, whereas Andor does largely take place in the broader city of DC.
So in like the DC metro area,
in
like
the DC metro era. Yeah.
It's like Baltimore. Yeah. Okay.
You know, because the films do a good job of showing like what life is like far away from the center of the empire. You know, what is it like in a backwater hicked, you know, desert planet like Tatooine. But Andor spends so much time on, Andor the show, spends so much time on Coruscant and shows you a lot of the banality of life in the capital city of a fascist government. You know, we see a lot of,
I momentarily forgot about all that stuff in Andor because I was just thinking of the Andor stuff, but yeah.
And I love all that stuff.
Yeah, no, it's great. Yeah.
and the other thing that is not a secret, is that the story of season two takes us directly up to the beginning of Rogue One. So I sat down today and rewatched Rogue One for probably the third time, wondering if with all the context of the entire backstory of the previous 5 years before this movie, I would appreciate it more. And my opinion about it, unfortunately, just hasn't changed.
Not to be like, I'm going to do that and feel exactly the same, but I've already had that conversation with one of the people that I saw Rogue One with in the first place, who was hoping it would elevate, and just like comparing the two back to back is just like, it does not help Rogue One whatsoever. Like my complaints with Rogue One are the characters felt flat, and that's not going to change.
Rewatching it now again, it was impressed upon me that almost all of the characters I actually really do like. It just gets to the point about halfway through the film where they're about to pull off the big heist, and all of a sudden there is this very unearned sense of camaraderie. Like they have all been through this thing together and they're rallying together. These fuckers don't know each other. Individually, they are all very cool and compelling, and I'm interested in their backstory. With the exception of Jyn Erso, unfortunately. And that's another big bummer about watching it after two seasons of Andor, is that Cassian Andor, I now have two whole seasons of television of depth to his character, whereas Jyn Erso remains a completely blank slate.
That's what I mean flat. Like I was so excited for Donnie Yen to, you know, be Blind Swordsman.
Yeah, he's so cool.
Alan Tudyk still is super charismatic in that movie. But like they are stereotypes. They've these characters. They're done well. You like when they pop up, but they don't have relationships. How about that?
Any relationship. Especially Jyn Erso does not have a relationship to anybody else, and that's something that I've done a bit more directing in the past month than I have in the previous decade of my life or so. Something that I've been saying, I think, multiple times as of late, is that Jyn Erso does not have a perspective.
Dave always talking to himself about Jyn Erso.
I'm sorry, Felicity Jones is playing each moment of every scene perfectly well, but it's as if she has no history, she has no inner core that directs how she is reacting to the stimulus around her. She's just, it's like she just woke up today, a brand newborn babe, stepped onto set, and just saw these words for the first time.
It is similarly, coaching, doing some improv workshops for LARPers, which has been fascinating. But it's what's the hardest thing to play is apathy. And I feel like that's what Jyn Erso's doing. And then right when the plot needs it, right at the end, it's just sort of like, okay, I've made a decision.
Yeah.
And that feels like pretty unearned.
Yeah. Why does she get to give a rousing speech to the troops? Does she deserve that? Yeah.
Like it's frustrating because it's like, it's almost there. And I get why people like it. The world building.
Yes.
Good. It was like a good perspective to take on where Star Wars was.
Yeah.
Like we were all excited to see like that story, and like from everything I've been told, Andor, you know, did those things just much better.
So Andor has the space to explore. Yeah. Andor has the time and the space to explore everything Rogue One didn't, capitalizes on it perfectly.
I was gonna say have not been a lot of Star Wars movies in the last many years, but there have been many shows.
Yeah, and Andor is the one I want to go back to that I, you know, started and stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing with those, a 2D character isn't always a bad thing, but no. If you're doing a TV show, you have eight. Imagine if all those Rogue One characters each had an episode each and then came together at the end. Very simple. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know,
if they had a reason to care about each other, that's all I want. That's all I'm asking. Rogue One could have been like 20 minutes longer. And just given them a reason to care about each other. That's really all I'm asking. Because, again, Alan Tudyk is great. Donnie Yen and Wen Jiang, they're fantastic together. Ben Mendelsohn is one of the best Star Wars villains, I think, because we see so many whiny...
I forgot he was even in there.
Yeah. We see so many whiny, snivelly, protocol-obsessed Imperial generals. And Ben Mendelsohn somehow, we see very few generals like him where the subtext of every single one of his lines is, I'm better than you, fuck you. And Ben Mendelsohn is so good at that. So I love that we get to see more of him in season two of Andor. Again, that's in all the promotional materials, no spoilers there. I think that's...
I look forward to watching it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, me too.
Very much.
And as somebody who's always like, there's a truck goes by. I need 5-10 years between Star Wars things. This feels like the right amount of time.
It's time.
That has finally passed.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It is very much time for this.
Time for a Star Wars thing.
For this Star War in particular. Like, this Star War is just so perfectly made for this moment in our current history right now.
And that's why I want to see it now, too.
Yeah.
Like, everybody mentioned.
Before it gets censored.
At this point.
the one more thing I wanted to say about rewatching Rogue One is that one of the things that I do have to hand to it is I think the Battle of Scarif is probably one of the best battles in any Star Wars film. Like, it really does a great job, plot-wise, tying together... like both the heist that's going on inside, the dogfight, the aerial dogfighting that's going on above the planet, and like the nameless boys who bravely given their lives on the beaches of Scarif. You know, like it really captures that sort of World War II movie grandiosity that a lot of other Star Wars battles approach, but this one just really nails it really well. So. So many great individual things about Rogue One that I almost feel bad criticizing it for missing the big picture, the overarching thing. But like, that's the thing
I think like as the nerds that we are, because of the amount of love that Rogue One gets, sometimes it is frustrating to go like, there are pieces missing that it could be better.
Yeah.
You know, it is right there.
That's my Star Wars talk.
Transition to, I don't know. Did either of you, Dave, you never watched Doctor Who. Tim, did you ever watch any Doctor Who? I've
not gotten to get Doctor Who going yet.
I mean, if you did, as I've
people
said,
people have
if
opinions you've taken about the current season. Yeah.
Yeah. This season fucking rules.
Oh,
season is so good. I know. Internet. People with political opinions are going to have opinions, but Nkuti Gatwa is just a charisma bomb. Mm. Like,
love that.
Yeah. So basically what's happened with Doctor Who, like the first, 4 or 5 seasons, I can't remember of the reboot. So like 2005 through,
the Eccleston years, you know, through the,
through Tennant into the early Matt Smith, you basically had like one showrunner, but it was kind of like two guys sharing. It was Russell T. Davies and Stephen Moffat. Mm. And eventually Russell T. Davies left and Stephen Moffat took over. And like mileage will vary depending on who you are on like that stuff. Jodie Comer seasons were terrible writing and really rough. And people were like, people blamed her. It was the writing, that sort of thing. So basically, like, the person that was running it before came back, which is always trepidatious to try and recapture the magic. But he's so good at just showing you, like, Doctor Who is good because it's someone who is not from Earth going, like, no, humanity's good. like, and in interesting ways. Yeah,
I've never heard it like, put that way, but that's nice.
Yeah, like at least, and that's why people get like mixed opinions when you get like your like grizzly like doctors, like like your happiest are your David Tennant and your Nkudi Gatwas. Mm. Like those are your like smiling, and then Matt Smith is kind of in between, and then Capaldi is growly and all that stuff. But but there's different ways to like show, you know. It's like if Q was like the reverse Q, like was on, was just like, no, you're going to be on trial. You're going to show why humanity's great. That sort of thing. And this, and Russell T. Davies is bleeding heart liberal, wears his politics on the sleeve. Mm. And thematically, I'm not going to say where this is, like, there's still one episode left. Maybe it fucks up, but like thematically it tied all of the things together that almost feel like he just wanted to say individually into a theme that I thought was very, very interesting. Mm. Going forward. Well, since you guys aren't
so often the penultimate episode, you know, has more.
No,
to say.
I do want to watch finale. Check out the most recent season just because, the kid expressed some interest in it. It's just.
Yeah, the last, I mean, like, Nkudi is the last two, but I think this season is totally cool to just, like, hop in as is. Like, each season kind of has their own mini arc. There's always allusions to, like, past Doctor Who stuff, but, like, there's 70 years of it, so they know not to, like, go too hard on the in-jokey stuff without letting you know what's going on. But I'm really liking it. I thought it, like, especially by like the third episode this season onward, has really had a lot of good momentum. So I'm happy Russell T came back. I still like Stephen Moffat's stuff. Like people tend to choose one or the other, but
apologies to listeners who are only hearing this in audio. I had to blow my nose, so I muted my mic on Discord, but that did not mute the recording. So that's just gonna be in the recording. That was dumb of me. I'm sorry.
It was pretty. I was trying to put words over it too. So if I was vamping, that's what that was.
No, it's great. That's good. You covered it up really well. Thank you.
Yeah. Did anybody watch this season of Rehearsal?
I've started it. Caught the first episode. Okay. Haven't been able to follow up, but it just concluded. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Just conclude. So I won't say much on that. I was hoping you were getting to at least like the middle of it. There is definitely an episode I want to talk about. I won't say where, because you'll be like looking out for it. But you'll know.
The first season I feel like didn't have this definitive turn, but definitely had kind of a turn where, like, oh, mm-hmm. these people that he's involved himself with are kind of derailing the whole procedure. And
this doesn't quite do. I think that's what's kind of interesting too. Is it like there are obviously big turns on this one and just huge moments, but there isn't just like that momentous like one twist that was the first season. This doesn't have the that almost like that's the thing that John Wilson is the best at, whereas it's How To with John Wilson is I'm following, oh, that's what the story is, now we're gonna do that like left turns. Yeah, there isn't as much, like, this is more calculated, but I think it was a smart way to go, like, okay, well, we've done that season. How can we separate this a little bit?
Yeah, that makes sense, because the first, I loved the first season. I won't complain about the first season, but the thought of trying to do that again and making it feel organic, because the first season really felt like, whether it was calculated or not, he managed to make the audience have to wonder, like, did this just get way out of his grasp? Like, what happened here? And that would be a hard magic trick to pull off twice. So I wouldn't expect that.
Yeah. And I think it helps expectations because, I mean, honestly, the first season's better. Like that just came together. It was kind of like one of those magic moments of TV at the time. But it's still really, really good. Been watching. I've seen 4 episodes of Poker Face. I like that show. That's another one where like the first season had like an almost very silly overarching story just to propel the character so that they could do episode to episode sort of thing. There is a person chasing Charlie that's chasing Natasha Lyonne. Not much of a spoiler. They resolve most of that in the second season and just let it be the show, which I thought was a smart way to go. Like by the third or fourth episode, they're just sort of like, okay, we're not. It's silly to keep checking in with this thing. like it's still like there are still ties there. There's still like a bigger story, but it is like it's more fun to have a Columbo every week.
Yeah.
And like of the four, the two best episodes have been the ludicrously silly ones, in my point of view, especially
And who have those guest stars been?
Yeah, I was trying to, I can't remember who the guest star of the first episode was. I don't remember. I didn't know her name, but like the Mulaney one was good, but that one was a little more story focused. I think like they had sillier comedians there to do jokes while they were telling the bigger story. Yeah. But Kumail was a Florida influencer. Yeah, so yeah. It's just like who talked to his alligator. It was great. And that's it felt like the sillier X-Files episodes.
Wonderful.
And John Mulaney's show wraps up next week. I've been keeping up with that. That's been very, very fun.
I have not. I want to so bad.
Yeah, you get. I know that it's as I said. Like it's a nice, easy watch when you get a chance. Where it's just sort of like I don't want to invest much of my brain. I could just put this on. And that the anime Lazarus that I mentioned, Cowboy Bebop. It's okay. It's like it's worth it for the music and the fight scenes. The story and the acting is okay. I'm not gonna like go to bank for it, but it does hit like a nice nostalgic spot because it's like it's showing on Adult Swim. It's got that nice like Adult Swim bumper at the beginning. It's it still feels like the guy that made Bebop and Shamurai and Samurai Champloo.
You're wearing Champloo.
Yeah, Champloo. And that's what I got for the TV side, anyways.
Mm-hmm. Tim, you welcome TV?
No, I don't watch TV. I don't watch no TV other than a particular wrestling show.
Yeah, that I am months behind on.
The Weiss is months behind on.
He's it's fully nice when I pop it on.
2.5 pay-per-views behind.
Yeah.
Just like, oh no, you got a ton of good shit to catch up on.
Well, that's the thing is like, I could just go like, meh, I'll start or I'll watch current. And I'm just like, but there's so much good stuff. Why would I skip it?
There's so much good stuff between there and here. You kind of, unfortunately, they've been on a bit of a run. I have seen 2 movies. One of which I liked. Yeah. What movie did you see?
Well, I'll tell you after you talk about your movies. It's your turn.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm sure we don't have any crossover. All right. Let's get this out of the way first. By his request, I took my kid to see Lilo and Stitch. Which is a soulless beat for beat recreation of a much more lively animated film from 20 plus years ago.
It made a bazillion dollars.
It made so much fucking money.
I was so mad when I saw that.
I am so used to, cause like, the theater's like right down the street that way. It's like a mile down the street at the mall. And I am very used to just kind of like looking up the shows, grabbing a couple seats wherever, like literally right before we go, and then just heading down there to try to get there 5 minutes late to miss some of the preview fucking commercial barrage, but it's never enough of it because it's a full 30 minutes at this point at a Regal Theater.
Yep. Yeah, I timed it.
But you know, he wanted to go and just like looking at the showings, I'm just like, my, these are all fucking packed. They are all packed. And it was like, and you know, we walk in there and there's like, you know, huge line for the snacks. There's like a family of people like dressed up as Stitch and or in blue Hawaiian garb doing photo ops. And like, then, what the hell was I going to say? Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. Then there was the movie. And yeah, I didn't like it. And the kid also didn't like it.
All right. That's my boy. Good.
Yeah, he was like miserable like 20, 30 minutes into it. He was like, this is so boring.
Had he seen the original?
So here's the thing. Yes, absolutely. Okay. He used to watch it all the time. And like, you know, we walked out of the movie and he was like, oh, dude. He's like, you know, oh, dude. He was not like, oh, dude. Yeah. He was just like, man, oh, that was like so bad. It was so boring. And da, da, da. I'm like, yeah, dude. And I'm kind of telling him like, I get it, but when I'm paying for you to see a movie, we're going to chill and we're going to watch the whole thing no matter what.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I know you're really, really looking forward to it. I know you really liked, I made some comment about the old one. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, what do you mean the old one? And I'm like, the animated one, the one that you love. He's like, I don't remember that. He didn't. It was before the memory event horizon where he just starts forgetting shit.
Yeah. Oh no.
Yeah. So
it's there though.
So it's there somewhere. Yeah, I'm sure. I like, and I'm just like, oh my god, we got to watch. I mean, he's familiar with Stitch, like as a character.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, right. This
well, what a great palate cleanser then to be like, what? There's an even better version.
Yeah, you, yeah. There's a version that's good. So it's like, yeah, I'm gonna have to like get him to actually watch Lilo and Stitch again to like refresh his brain. Because I know he loves that movie because he is both Lilo and Stitch, like melded into one. But it was just like, holy crap, there is just nothing going on here. And like, I haven't seen any of the Disney live action remakes. Lion King, I didn't see. I think
Beauty if Cruella counts, that one's actually good, but that one's kind of
That one doesn't count.
That's not.
No, it doesn't count. Yeah. that one would count if it was like CG talking dogs. Yeah. Right, is it?
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's not.
We saw Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast because Julia was the right age for those when those came out.
Okay. And
fine. Not good.
Yeah, I'm just like, this is like, you know, a lot of the same lines, like same story beats, same direction, like just like, yeah, you just that movie, except with way less personality or, you know, interesting things to look at. It's just, yeah, you make one of the aliens, you know, the aliens, they're trying to track them down. Like, you know, they give them like human disguise forms so they don't have to animate them all the time, which is less interesting, of course. Yeah. It's just kind of like, okay, yep. All right. You did it.
It's just, especially with like this movie, particularly like a movie person I followed forever. Just like, was like the original is like has so much Calvin and Hobbes to it. Like lot of movies can't and to specifically take all the magic out of that is just so sad.
And a lot of the discourse I've been seeing in the last, you know, couple of days has been about specifically the change to the ending, which is problematic in a lot of ways.
And yep.
People are big mad about it and I don't blame them.
Yep.
Yep. Kinda sucks.
Yep. Yeah. Especially it was pointed out to me that, that natives get like free tuition, going to college on the island. They don't need to go to San Diego.
Huh, how about that?
Yeah. Yeah. They don't need to give up their little sisters to foster care, even if it's to the neighbors that, you know, and
how about that?
How about that?
Yeah.
I haven't heard of any of this, but, just yeah.
Yeah.
What a decision.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, Disney, not nailing it, with, right now.
They tried to frame it in a way it's like, oh, you know, Nana needs to be able to like chase her dreams too, you know? It's like, and she has a teleporter gun. She can just come back whenever she wants. But there's that little undercurrent there. I'm just
thinking about them, like Disney cutting up a trans character/ storyline in Win or Lose earlier this year as well. And
they sure tried. I know, it's like watching it and being just like, oh, this is that episode. This is what's going on here, because it's still obvious, even if they toned it down.
Yeah, still trans character.
Yeah, like.
I mean, Snow White only came out, what, 6 weeks ago? 2 months ago? Yeah. Maybe? Yeah. Like, wow. Yeah, I know.
It was like March.
It was March.
Yeah.
I have to wonder, like, if the positioning of the release of two live-action remakes, you know, how was that decision made? If Snow White had launched over Memorial Day weekend, would it be the highest grossing Memorial Day weekend movie?
I don't think so.
Yeah, as much as I'm surprised by what people see, like, people can sniff out a bad movie, like, and people know that Snow White is a bad movie.
Well, it's also a thing where it's like Lilo and Stitch, like, this is a movie that would have been formative for kids that are now adults and have kids, potentially. Like, they are like, oh, we are going to take our kids to see this remake of this movie that we loved and probably have already raised them on. So, you know, it was a big event for them. Whereas Snow White, you know, that was old when we were.
Yeah, that's true.
Young. And it's an old thing. And it's like, okay, you did this and it looks terrible. So you're not bringing us into the theater. You know, people that are that old they're walking around the mall, but I don't know if they're going in any stores. they had a thank you breakfast for mall walkers at the Galleria at some point. Ooh. I think it might have been today. Yeah.
That's nice, dear.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It did remind me kind of just like, oh man, remember like 23 years ago when, you know, Disney was Disney, but they didn't own everything. So it was kind of like they were over there doing their Disney thing, not owning all of the media
in a position where they're still a little bit scrappy and could take some chances.
Well, this specifically was kind of their like mini comeback after the fall, after the Renaissance, because it was like you had the Renaissance movies, and then it was kind of like Pixar kind of took the crown for like a hot second.
When Pixar got hot.
Yep. It was like Lilo and Stitch and Emperor's New Groove were like, okay, I guess I'll pay attention to Disney. And then Shrek did its thing and wrecked cartoons for 30 years.
Quick interjection. My daughter is grieving the fact that her school musical next year is going to be Shrek. They've been dropping clues about what it was going to be. And for the first week or two, she was like, it's going to be Into the Woods. Because it was like, you know, a mishmash of fairy tales all happening. Yeah. But it's becoming more and more obvious that it's going to be Shrek. And she's just like, oh, no. Oh, and I think like kids today know that Shrek sucks. It's a very specific cohort of people who have nostalgia for Shrek are the only ones that like it. And I think that describes the age of her drama director. So
I'm trying to how to describe this. So, like, I wasn't there, but my work had a Shrek-themed night as a, like, a sort of joke thing. Like, we're a fantasy tavern.
Sort
of thing. But we were very careful about, like, who comes in and what type of nerd does. And the thing with Shrek is, like, half the fandom... Not half the fandom. A small part of the fandom genuinely likes Shrek. Mm-hmm. A bigger part of the fandom ironically likes Shrek. And like, it's one of the weirdest fandoms, because like those two kind of like intersect in interesting ways depending on how you
there's like a Turing test of like, if they present the same, how can you tell the difference?
Right. And like, if a Shrek falls on its back in the desert, do you pick it up? And a lot of people grew up with the memes more than the movies.
Yeah.
At this point. And while I really don't like Shrek, there is stuff to like about Shrek.
Sure.
And the last Puss in Boots movie specifically. Yeah, but just fantastic. Like, we were comparing it to another night that I was not there, but we did like a Twilight theme night, and everybody was great because everybody non-ironically that likes Twilight. They're not going in to kind of like soft make fun of it.
Yeah.
Whereas like Shrek kind of has that almost post-edgelordy like feeling to it sometimes. I don't know. Like there's a lot of different fans to it, but I've never run into a fandom quite like that one. So yeah, have fun with else. The musical.
Thanks. Yeah, no, sorry for that diversion. But yeah, you, Emperor's New Groove and Lilo and Stitch were, you know, just two great examples of Disney like doing you could argue that they are highly culturally specific, more so Lilo and Stitch than Emperor's New Groove, even though it's, you know, for Emperor's New Groove, the Peruvian culture is, you know, it's window dressing. But it's right. But it's there at least, and stylistically in terms of the writing, you know, taking just big diversions into very specific styles of comedy that they're, you know, the word, you know, diversions from their general audience, crowd pleasers, you know, the other stuff that they were trying, like Treasure Planet, and you know, to compete with DreamWorks and Dinosaur to compete with Pixar and what Bug's Life. No, Bug's Life was no.
That was
they
Pixar.
Didn't.
That was Pixar.
Yeah, that was Pixar, and then Ants was DreamWorks.
Ants was the Wah Bug's Life. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and I haven't gone back to watch, but I've heard there has definitely been a reevaluation of Treasure Planet at this point. I think the people that grew up with Treasure Planet really love that one.
Yeah, I've actually never seen it.
That one had some imagination. Yeah.
Yes, there's a. People that are about 4 to 5 years younger than us, it's like Treasure Planet, Atlantis, Road to El Dorado.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's the one that would be a hard one for me. I think Road to El Dorado.
Yeah. Some people. Yeah. It's one of those little like sub-generational things. Cause I have just named like movies that my wife loves that she grew up with from being just a little bit younger. Yeah.
The character of Chell being many people's sexual awakening in Road to El Dorado. Rightly so.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's like things that were popped on Nickelodeon, like after I went to college that I never saw or got into, which I would like Invader Zim.
Yeah.
That was right on the line. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
SpongeBob is also one of those things that was like, so like people just younger a lot. Just like,
quick aside with the Emperor's New Groove. Like if you get a chance, there's a documentary called The Sweatbox that I watched either last year or the year before.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So if you're not familiar, I don't know how else to describe her. It's what IMDb describes her. It is Sting's wife is the person that has documented the behind the scenes of Emperor's New Groove. And there was never an official release, but you can find it.
Hang on one second. Oh, I'll be right back.
And it is a fascinating documentary.
Yeah. The last time you... Okay, now my memory is blurring, Weiss, because the last time you recommended The Sweatbox to me, I can't recall if I actively, like, if I right away went to watch it, or if what I ended up watching was snippets from it, or if it was just the Disney-sanctioned background featurette on The Emperor's New Groove. My memory is hazy.
It would be very not Disney-sanctioned. It's just shockingly candid is like why it's so good for Disney specifically.
Well, at the other end of the Disney spectrum,
I saw
Thunderbolts.
You liked Thunderbolts. Okay.
Yeah, no, I like Thunderbolts. Yeah.
Good.
It felt like the first Marvel movie in forever. I was not like, I don't know, coping walking out of it.
Really. Hey, right?
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, that was a... What up?
Before you dive in, and before I forget, I need to ask you a Thunderbolts question.
Yes.
Is what Thunderbolts the origin of the meme that I've seen going around of a crowd of people pointing at someone, calling them by the wrong name, and then that person replies, not what I'm called? Is that a scene in Thunderbolts? I feel like this is a Thunderbolts thing.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen this, I guess.
Like, say, here's, like, Mega Man on your shirt. And, like, Mega Man says, yes. Hey, everyone, I'm here. It's me, Mega Man. And a crowd of people point at him and yell, Astro Boy! And he says, not what I'm called.
Oh, maybe. Maybe.
All right. Well, I must be wrong then. I thought it was a Thunderbolts.
No, I think you might be right. Now I'm wondering.
Like, is there a scene in Thunderbolts where someone calls someone by the wrong name? And he's like, not what I'm called.
Well, vampy, vampy.
Know your meme. Polyamorous, not what I'm called. Let me see.
Polyamorous, not what I'm called.
Let's see.
I mean, I would watch that.
Yeah, totally.
I don't think this has anything to do with Thunderbolts.
Okay, I apologize for the diversion. Right. Then my bad.
It was a fun diversion. Yeah. As diversions go.
I could have sworn it had something to
much
do with
sharper with your meme culture, Dave. Thunderbolts. Yeah, so this felt like the first Marvel movie in a while that just kind of landed. Yeah. And it's, you know, nothing is going to reach the heights for me of, like, you know, the build and them executing on Avengers and the first Guardians of the Galaxy and, like, Black Panther. Well, I mean, maybe something couldn't, because Black Panther was awesome and a pretty relatively late one. But yeah, it was good because it had, I mean, you got Florence Pugh in there, who is just, you know, also a charisma bomb of a person.
Yes.
And she's carrying the show. But, you know, you have a lot of fun characters being mashed together, not characters that, you know, a lot of characters that people don't care about, but hopefully people care about a little bit more now. It's still wild to me that you have Ghost starring in a feature length Marvel movie. This way, just like very also ran character in the comics, but I love that.
Given where how many people have seen Thunderbolts, which, as far as I know, is Tim and some critics at this point. But I've heard more on Tim's side than not, too. Yeah, totally. So hopefully this will kind of be a nice hidden gem for people in the future.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's a. Like, the entire movie takes place in the span of, like, a day and a half or so. It was, like, when I realized, so, like, you know, you, and a lot of it is like, depression is a big theme of the movie. Yeah, like, fun. The biggest theme of the movie, like, the kind of, it is the main villain of the movie is depression, really.
Cool.
It starts out with, like, you know, that. Yelena just, like, you know, she's doing her job, which is this, you know, insane international espionage, breaking and entering and, like, assassinating and stealing stuff thing. But she's bored. She is bored of her job and bored of her life, and feeling in the dumps. And, you know, you have Red Guardian is, like, driving a limo service and endlessly misses the glory days of, you know, when he did whatever he did. You know, US Agent is a mess. As you know, you eventually find out that he has lost, you know, his family has left him. So, like, you know, everybody's kind of dealing with it and going through it. And, like, that's the big through line of the movies. Like, these are all, you know, losers whose lives are completely out of order. And, like, yeah, they have to band together and work together to do something greater. But, you know, that's what it works. Yeah. They all get sent down into, you know, this facility to, you know, do a thing. But then it's like 20, 30 minutes later, like, they're still working their way out of it. Like, they're taking their time to do things in this movie that I feel like, you know, most Marvel movies are, like, sprinting from one thing to the next and, like, throwing new things on the screen. And, you know, it's like by the time they get out, then there's another action scene. And that's like they kind of move on into the climax of the movie. And it just, you know, it felt good and cool. And, you know, there is a cool villain who does a. The way people kind of get like. The things that happen to people at the end of this movie freaked my kid out.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. It's just like, it's nothing like crazy violent or anything, but it was like just like kind of 80s dark fantasy disturbing enough to make him go like, I need to get out of this theater. Ooh, like,
hey.
Yeah, it just like, you know,
that's my catnip.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not going to give like any of us nightmares or anything, but it's the thing that hits his age. It's just like, oh, that's like freaking me out. Like what's going on here? And it's done very, yeah, it felt cool. In the way these movies have not felt cool. And I've seen, I don't know. Do you guys know kind of like the big twist at the end thing?
Not at all.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
So. I thought it was unavoidable because of how they did the marketing after the opening weekend. But
I mean, I might and not have registered something as a twist, but I really haven't seen any advertising for Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
Outside of like, yeah, it's the
completely
first
escaped me.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Fair. I will say no more and spare you.
Yeah. Cause now you've got me more excited to see this movie. You, that was the best pitch I've ever heard, is that there's something terrible waiting at the end.
I mean, it's, I don't want to overhype that, but it was, you know, it was like, this is cool. Like, this is not just like some big CG stupid fight. Like,
yeah, it's great. And it sounds like it's something with emotional stakes.
Yes, it is.
Right. It's great. Right. It's the appeal of Spider-Man. Like, oh, that Homecoming was the first one, right? Of the,
yeah,
of the, that batch. Yeah. A nice contained story. Like, that's, that helps so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and of course it is dovetailing into other things because things are happening, but
yeah,
it doesn't feel burdened by them. It doesn't feel like, you know, a lot of those phase two era movies went when it's just like, well, this movie is just in service of getting things together for Age of Ultron or Infinity War down the line. Like, it does its own thing. It's building something, of course, that's going to tie into other stuff. And it was the post or mid credit scene. Like, even though, like, I mean, there was a trailer for Fantastic Four before the movie. Like,
yes,
it's coming out in 3 months, 2 months from now.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how do you feel about Fantastic Four at this point?
I'm excited about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm mixed. I think like I'm most excited for Michael Giacchino music and the 60s setting. It's like the trailers have just felt a little sparse, I guess, to me, like literally not a bunch of people outside of the main cast in the shots where I'm just
they're not showing what's going to go on, which.
Yeah.
Cause no, I mean, sure. So, you know, this was the first, like, you know, mid credits thing in a while. That's like, you know, even though I knew it was coming, I'm just like, oh, this feels like cool and special and not like, oh, you're just throwing this character in there for the fuck of it. You know, which I think the Eternals was like the most we're throwing characters in for the fuck of it with no idea. Like, like, you know, it was just kind of, okay, here's Star Fox and here, you know, we're going to hint at Black Knight.
Star Fox.
Yeah, that's his name.
Yeah.
Brother of Thanos or whatever.
One had the ridiculous X-Men? Was that Doctor Strange?
I think that was Multiverse.
Yeah, that was Multiverse. As much as those are both movies I defend, but I do not defend their mid-credits scene.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just like, I mean, it was kind of crazy. Kelsey Grammer Beast, of all things.
It looks terrible.
Who's going to be, he's get ready for a lot more of that furry face.
It'll just be better rendered. I think it just did not.
They're not doing it last minute.
Yeah.
The thing about Fantastic Four is that it's seemingly, you know, it's like another universe and I guess the theories are, was like, oh, their planet's going to get destroyed by Galactus and then they jump over to this universe and they're going to be kind of out of time in this time. But fantastic. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's not what happens. I don't know.
I assume it's an incursion event. That's what they're called, right? The one world against another world kind of story. Like that's what it's felt like they've been building to me. I could be wrong, but
well, it's you know, it's Secret Wars. You know, in
yes,
to in there. You know, the Marvel version of Christ's on Infinite Earths.
Yeah. I'll be right back.
Yeah. So, but Fantastic Four are dorky. So taking them out of the modern setting, any kind of modern setting, and pushing them back into the 60s, yes, I think is the best thing you could do for
it is almost you have to at this point. Like, I don't, obviously they tried multiple times, did not work, but
yes,
in a modern setting.
Yep.
Which I still have refused to watch. But
which one? Any of them?
I've literally never seen any of them outside of the Arrested Development, like making fun of like the 90s one.
Yeah, I saw some. Well, there was a clip from the first one, the first 2000s one.
Yeah,
Chris Evans is Johnny Storm, that was like on repeat at a place where we used to work.
Yeah.
So I saw that scene a lot, but I don't think I ever watched the thing all the way through, and I never saw anything. I forgot that like Michael B. Jordan was another Human Torch.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is, well, I mean, I'll take that as a natural transition at this point.
yeah. Take it. Accept it.
Yeah. It is been kind of like really cool to see his transition to, like, I mean, straight up movie star at this point, no question, after Sinners. Mm-hmm. I'll wait for Dave to... Yeah, Dave, we have moved... We have done a transition, the smoothest transition from Michael B. Jordan in Fantastic Four to Sinners.
Oh,
we have done it. We have... We might as well just end the podcast at this point.
This sounds like it was incredibly smooth. Sounds like it was very well done.
Very smooth.
Nothing and makes a transition smoother than talking about how smooth it was.
Yes, exactly. Which is... pointed out 1,000 times, which is my favorite thing.
I know, it's just, that's guess. such a podcast listening thing. It's just like listening to podcasters trying to do transitions and then complimenting themselves when they do an especially good one.
Ooh. I know.
Man, you got me wishing so hard I could have been there for that.
Well, you can go back and listen to the
You have the recording.
I have the recording. I'm going to have to.
Yeah. Not even my opinion, but talking to like many people at work, like Michael B. Jordan is just a movie star at this point. Like the next movie he does, he is headlining. There is a line out the door, which is exciting and earned at this point. I've seen a lot of like twin performances, and it's pretty rare to see one that is so good, and that they're not like diametrically opposed. They're not made specifically to be the opposite of the other person.
Yeah.
Yep. Like they're both deep characters on their own. Like you forget that they're two different people like half the time. Like personally, I was more into the movie in the first half in the setup, because that was almost surprised me more in how much time that they were taking just setting up the world. And I really liked everybody. I love Delroy Lindo whenever Delroy Lindo shows up in fucking anything. Ludvig Göransson doing the music was the smartest choice on that. Obviously won't spoil when it gets into like spoiler stuff at the end, but as many times as people were just sort of like, yeah, you know, like, gotta stay for this scene, it's really important. Mm-hmm. Like, it does tie things together. Like, you're not gonna leave. I don't know why people are like, you need to stay. You're not gonna be a fucking, like, the movie is giving you breadcrumbs. It's literally like 5 seconds afterwards.
Yeah.
But like,
some people are just like, time to go, I gotta piss, I gotta whatever. Yeah.
But no, that really did go from like, this is what the movie is, to like, oh, that wraps things up in a really beautiful bow. But I mean, there was one without doing it like spoiler, I feel like it had a couple endings where I almost felt like it Casino Royale'd for a second. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, Casino Royale ends and then he goes off to kill that guy. And you're like, you know, yeah, I guess that makes sense. And then it like goes off and does another thing. And you're like, well, I wish that was tied in a little bit more. And there was a scene like that that I was just sort of like, I wish that was tied into the story just a little bit more. I feel like that would have helped it a bit for me. But like, I really liked everything that it was doing. So, yeah.
Was it the stuff like the next morning?
Yeah. Okay. Which was an insanely good, like, well shot. Like, it was still a very climactic, high action kind of scene.
Yeah, that might have just been like some catharsis for the movie's target audience, you know?
Oh, for sure. To me, it was... And this is one of those things where, again, like, it was good. Like, that scene was really good. Mm-hmm. I just think it would have been, like, even better if it had, like, one moment besides, like, oh, right, that was blank, that went into blank, you know? Because it... Honestly, I think that might be our that would be spoiler. I'll say it later. But
thank you, appreciate.
So, yeah.
We were going to talk about this for by this time next month.
I know. Like there's ways I want to dance around it, but I see a pattern coming from that scene, which I'm happy about. I hope I see that scene at the end of many movies. Is all I'm saying. But yeah, no, I was happy with it. I only saw it at a Regal, so it did. I was disappointed I didn't get to see it in an IMAX because I know that they mess with the formatting, like very well in that. And
oh, that really movie continues to make money. Also, by
yeah,
the
it's
way.
Still yeah. out there. Like I was surprised. I saw it late. I used it as a birthday movie because I was just sort of like, what's out right now, and that was the only thing that was good. And not really somewhere between a movie and TV. I watched the Paul Rubin / Pee Wee documentary that's on HBO Max.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. It's I mean, like, I was going to like it no matter what, yeah. But like one of the things I loved about it so much is that Paul Rubens is such a fucking brat to the end. And him fucking with the director, like 2023 Paul Rubens, like doing things that should grate on your nerves by any other human being. Like he's just this thing with the sound person and like, like telling the director that the lighting setup isn't good when it is. And like, like all of this stuff that's just like, and it kind of helps because like that documentary director, and he calls him on it, has made like the only other movie I saw from him, he did a documentary on, I don't know if you remember this rip from the headline story years ago, Starship Earth, which was just like a cult that basically it was we're living together. I think it was tied into the biodome kind of like experiment and such. But it was like, it was this documentary where like everything to do with this cult was interesting. And then the director went off on this other tangent and it became really boring. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know if I trust this director. And Paul Rubens kind of felt the same way where it's just like a lot like the meta documentary is Paul Rubens wrestling with control about the documentary and about his narrative. And like that stuff is so fascinating. Like,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, like, you know, like it's a two-part documentary and it obviously touches on the movie and the show and the controversy.
Yeah,
but it spends a lot of time on like footage that we haven't seen of Paul Rubens as like an artist, and just sort of like, oh, like he did see himself as like a serious artist, and then like Pee-wee was this character that caught on and he went like, well, this has gotten more response than anything else. I guess I should do this. And like kind of following that path. And yeah. Like it's really good. So yeah, that was
on my list. And, that's
yeah. And did I mention the Conan Mark Twain thing last podcast? I probably did.
Yeah.
That was really good. But that's it on movie side. The only I was gonna say only video game I have that just went up on the Switch, like Game Boy emulator, was this game I had never heard of called Survivor Kid or Survival Kids.
Yeah,
it looks like Pokemon. It's made from Konami in 1999, and it's pretty addictive. Like it's as I said, the interface is Pokemon, but it's just like a kid abandoned on a beach, and you're finding items. You're combining your, I think like the funniest part about it is the presentation is so cutesy, but the stakes are so real, where it's just sort of like, you're thirsty, you're about to die. Oh, you died. You died on the beach. Cute little sprite on the beach. So it's, I don't know if I'm going to stick with it, but I think it's a very interesting game. And I think like, this is the kind of stuff I like popping up on emulation when I'm paying for this.
Well, so
apparently this. Yeah, what were you going to say, Dave?
I was going to say what I know about Survivor Kids is that it is the originator of a series. The most notable Western release was Lost in Blue on the DS. Yeah,
that's exactly what I was about
to say. Oh, I didn't know it led to Lost in Blue. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know that until just now either. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, it's the predecessor to the Lost in Blue series, and there is a new Survival Kids game coming out for Switch 2.
Okay.
It's like a co-op. I mean, like, you know, survival games are the rage these days. So.
Yes.
And there was a Wii game, Survival Kids Wii.
Oh. Yeah. Music's pretty good, too, for, it's Konami in 99, Game Boy Color. Yeah. So it's,
it was Survival Kids Wii in Japan, and in the U.S. it was literally Lost in Blue Shipwrecked.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I think, like, mechanically the most interesting thing was, combining items with, like, no prompts. Where it's just sort of like, oh, I wonder if these things could go together. Oh, I guess they did. Okay. Huh. Or trying out different foods and seeing the effects and such. But
yeah, that seems that would be interesting as a Game Boy Color game and not as a modern game where it's getting too complicated or influenced by other things.
Yes.
100%. Yes. It needs those restrictions. And we're a couple days away from it, but I did throw down my entire $40 for the Playdate Season 2. So. Mm. Have something to say about that next time.
Thursday.
Yeah. Thursday. I know.
Yeah. I will be picking that up with this paycheck this week just because I want to be there for the magic of that they dreamed the whole time.
It's literally why I bought the system. I'm still playing Spilled the Mushrooms every once in a while. That game is still pretty addicting.
It's definitely a thing where it's like I go through phases where I'll play a bunch of Playdate stuff and then just kind of not for a bit. Yeah. Is tough without that backlight. Dave, you saw a movie, right?
I saw a movie. I saw Friendship starring Tim Robbins and Paul Rudd.
I see that. Yeah.
Spoiler-free review. I agree with what seems to be the critical consensus is that, like, if you like, I think you should leave, you will like this movie. It feels like a feature length, I think you should leave sketch. But I think the magic of it is that if you consider that statement for a minute, you know, there's so many comedy sketches don't work if you stretch them to feature length. And so it really is like, a trick to pull it off. And so when we walked out, I was like, that was really good. It really did feel like, and I think you should leave sketch, but it never felt dragged out. It never started to feel like it was actually like a stealth sketch movie, like Run Ronnie Run, say,
sad.
it really did feel like they successfully sustained a premise for an entire feature length film, like a sketch premise. And I had to think about why that is. And I think a great thing that Tim Robinson accomplishes with I Think You Should Leave, and I've been going back and watching Detroiters for the first time too, which I had never seen.
Yeah, I got to do that a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I thought it held up really well.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. I love it. I think it's great. Yeah. Great thing that he is able to accomplish, and this might seem like it can broadly apply to all sketch comedy, but I think something he does really well is that his sketches are really, really good at speaking the language of media so that he can then subvert that language of media. It's not just the language of, well, you know what this genre is supposed to be. It's not just the language of, like, you know what a horror movie is supposed to feel like, so we're going to subvert that. It is everything about any given piece of media, whether it's a highly specific kind of commercial that is just sort of in the background of your life that you don't necessarily think about until someone subverts the trope of it, and then takes it in a wild direction. And the thing that the movie really can't do is what so many of his sketches do, is that he'll start with a media premise, you know, whether it's this is, you know, this is a sitcom style relationship, this is an office style relationship, this is a certain kind of commercial, and then we'll subvert that premise and just, you know, sort of take it down and drag it kicking and screaming down an alley. But then at some point, the one weird person, you know, it's one weird person in a crowd of normals gawking at the one weird person. But eventually sort of the reveal in almost all of his sketches is that the normals are gawking at the weird person, not for the same reason that we, the audience, are. Like, eventually they will say something that acknowledges what the weird person is doing is unusual, but not in the way that we see it. Like, they will sort of join in on the fun. The sketch about did you see that really weird? I'm so concerned about Deborah. Did you see that really weird thing about how the baby cried when I held it, and how the baby doesn't think that people should change, or that people can change? I'm a huge piece of shit. We, the audience, are laughing at that's a ridiculous thing to say. But that's the point at which the normals in the sketch are like, well, were you a huge piece of shit? Like, they acknowledge the reality of the weird person's situation. And so, like, the movie isn't really able to do that, because once you do that, you've given up the game, right? Once you do that, you've
released tension.
You flinched, so you have to marry your mother-in-law. Yeah, Paul, you flinched, so you have to marry your mother-in-law, Paul. Like, when everyone starts agreeing with the weird person, that's when you've sort of given up the game and the sketch has to end. And so the movie can't really do that, because that would make it feel like you were really straining a premise. So it avoids doing that for as long as it possibly can. And it succeeds. It walks that tightrope really, really well, which is, like, a pretty big accomplishment.
Yeah. It's hard, and it's really tempting to do that joke. I think that's why a lot of sketch premise movies feel like a series of sketches, because you can end those and start again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, even as brilliant as Wayne's World is, there's still, like, a lot of self-contained, like,
vignettes,
moments.
Essentially. Yes. Yeah. Each scene is its own joke.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, and I think you could argue that this movie does that as well, but also, I mean, but it also succeeds at taking a whole film genre. A thriller. It's single white female. You know, it takes that premise and makes it a comedy sketch and sustains it.
Yeah.
You know, and geez, it just does it really well. So, yeah, I walked out of that movie very happy.
Good.
Yeah. And 10 minutes worth of preamble before the film at my theater. This was an Apple Cinema, which is a very rare up here in Western New York, where you can have dinner delivered to your seat.
Oh, one of those.
It's one of those. We just don't have those, you know, around here.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
Yeah. So that was a delight, and I don't even really think it was trailers. It was 10 minutes of commercials. The movie started 10 minutes after its start time.
Nice.
So
acceptable. Yeah, yeah, I see that Kate Mara was in this movie, who was also in Fantastic Four with Michael B. Jordan.
Yes.
Damn.
Everything comes back.
What a transition. Yeah. Fantastic Four.
To nowhere. To nowhere. We're not going back to that. I have not watched it in the last 20 minutes.
And it folded in upon itself. And now just the podcast is an Ouroboros.
Yeah. Say, yeah, if you were here, you could have snagged that sweet transition that Weiss took into Sinners.
I feel like I just rode it like a wave, baby. I feel like it just popped back up and I hopped aboard and we just made magic. Oof.
Gross. Yeah, I have not played much in the way of video games this month.
Did you get that Capcom collection?
Oh, I did. Yes, I did get
it. I have not.
That. Yeah, I did. Do
it is on my mind a lot.
I got to review it and I bought a copy anyway because I wanted it on Switch. Yeah, it's great. It's freaking what we played on Dreamcast in 2001, the collection, basically. Minus Marvel vs. Capcom 2, which obviously was in the. But yeah, it's like, okay. Yeah, let's pop in Plasma Sword for about 20 minutes. Sure. Yeah. Let's. Yeah, but yeah, you got your Capcom SNK, Capcom SNK 2, Project Justice, which is the second English release of Project Justice.
Oh, I know.
That's huge.
That's the one. And Power Stone.
And Power Stone, yeah, and Power Stone 2. So, you know, you don't get the, like, the single player powers, like the item fusing thing from Power Stone 2 on Dreamcast. But it's like that was really kind of tedious, even though it was fun. It's also
I just wanted it portable. I thought
that I know. It's like one of the, like with Marvel vs. Capcom 2, you can't relive unlocking all the characters with the collection. But it's like we did that. I have done that at least three or four times in my life, unlocking every character in Marvel vs. Capcom 2. I don't need to do it anymore. Yes, it was incredibly fun the first couple times, but not. I don't need it now.
Yeah, I also lamented that those home modes were missing, but then I thought, like, I just don't have time for that in my life right now. I just want to dive into some Power Stone.
Well, it's like, you have the other games, you know, those versions still exist. Like, they're not as convenient to get to, but, you know, these are arcade games. Yeah, it's Street Fighter 3, Alpha 3 Max, so it's all the characters from the home ports back into the arcade. Which
so I can play as Eagle, not on a Game Boy Advance or a PSP.
Actually, I don't think Eagle's in it.
Yeah, no Eagle.
Really? 1. Not in Max?
It's like the PlayStation 1 port characters. They added a lot of characters to that game for PlayStation 1. That's where they added like Blanca and a bunch of others. Like the original arcade Alpha 3 is kind of...
Because this predates the GBA and PSP ports, so it would be missing Eagle, Maki, Yoon, and Ingrid. But that's it. Everyone else is in there. Which is because I like Maki. But you get her in Capcom vs. SNK 2. I did not buy the collection, but I have been purposefully replaying the games from this collection to take a stroll down memory lane, and I'm really liking the modern day reappraisal of Capcom versus SNK 1 that people have been enjoying because I forgot just how unique it was. Like those were some amazing sprite backgrounds with crazy good intros. Yes. Like great music, this Y2K aesthetic.
I go back to that soundtrack is my version of that quite a bit.
Like Capcom SNK 1 got plowed just by Capcom SNK 2 becoming the one that people played. And it's that game's awesome. Like it has amazing stages, amazing music, like an incredible cast. But Capcom SNK 1 is still like really cool.
I had completely forgotten, and this is super in the weeds, but like the Capcom versus SNK introduced that great new redrawn sprite for Bison, but it took away his Psycho Crusher, which I appreciate, replaced it though with this like with a push move, sort of a press that was more analogous to his sort of double kick chargeback move, which I really like. And then I picked up Capcom versus SNK2 to find that, oh, they gave him his Psycho Crusher back. And I'm sure at the time I was relieved, but like, I kind of missed that really cool charge press move that they gave him, because it sort of changed the dynamic of him and made him, you know, because the Psycho Crusher is kind of cheap. You know, you can, it's easy to exploit. That's usually more into the weeds into fighting game mechanics than I get, but like, just another example of how like there is cool different value in the first game that the second game just doesn't have. Love the second game though, you know. Oh my god, that second game. The roster, the background stages, just a lot of the character art. I love for so many of those SNK characters. This is my favorite game in which they appear.
Yeah. Yes.
They play the best here. They look the best here.
Yeah. It's like,
sorry,
a skip,
most of the Fatal Furies.
Like from 98 to 98 to CVT, CVS to maybe Mark of the Wolves if they were in there.
Yeah. yeah. Just great, good stuff. Something that I was trying to look into was the real nitty gritty mechanical differences of Alpha 3 Upper and how it runs on the Dreamcast hardware as opposed to more quote unquote accurate versions like the CPS2 original and say the Saturn port. There's some weird stuff going on with the Dreamcast port that I only sort of vaguely knew about. And honestly, I can't find any confirmation about it though. Like I believe, I could be wrong, I believe that the PlayStation port rendered the characters as, or rendered the hitboxes as polygons and mapped the sprites on top of those, so the collision detection was different from the arcade. And I think the Dreamcast version did the same, and I know that there's a hitbox mode in this collection that reveals where the hitboxes are. I'm led to understand that like the Dreamcast sprites are slightly distorted compared to, like, they're a little, the resolution somehow makes them a little taller and skinnier. I don't know. Obviously this is stuff that we never noticed playing at the time, but it's just one of those weird little details that, like, I always loved the Dreamcast port and thought that it was great. But then you go back and see a lot of reports that, like, no, it actually was, it's so inaccurate to the arcade. If you play competitively, you'll find that a lot of stuff doesn't work. But then this was, this is the Naomi port, which was even further tweaked from the Dreamcast version. So who knows?
Like, as I mean, obviously I'm usually Dreamcast everything. Alpha 3 was the rare occasion that I was like, the PS1 felt better for whatever reason. I mean, like, obviously controller for fighting games, but like,
I mean, that's just where we played it at the time was,
and that too.
Yeah. Like, we didn't have the Dreamcast version didn't come out until a little bit later. And
I got the burned version, and it was more, you know, novelty.
It was a game we played on PlayStation. The Dreamcast, we were playing, you know, these other games that were on here.
Yes.
But yeah, having Project Justice is incredible.
Put $5 on sale. Like, as I say, just give me like $1 on sale.
Power Stone 2, of course, a game you're going to sit down and play, like, you know, for like, what, 30 minutes, and then you're going to play the other stuff. And then maybe you loop back to Power Stone. It is our, you know, a 2001 Hot Night on George's Adventure Island playlist. Like, really. Yeah. And it's fantastic. And Capcom Fighting Evolution is there too.
I mean, the stuff that I didn't really play, like Capcom Evolution Fighting, like, is exciting though, because I didn't give it like much of a shot, even though I'm not going to like it as much as everything.
No, that game is on there. That game is
kind of garbage, but
it is trash. At least like Plasma Sword has like 20 some characters, like a ton of characters to muck around with. Well, Power Stone 2 has two more characters in it that like I don't remember ever playing with. Like there's what's his name? He's like, I don't know any of the characters right now. The guy in the red flight suit.
Falcon.
He has like, I think it's like his dad. Whatever. He's like in a brown flight suit with like a mustache. Okay. And there's some other girl in it that I never. The select character screen came up and I just kind of looked at it for like 15 seconds trying to figure out what was wrong. It's like there was these two other characters on there that I had never seen before.
And I mean, like, that alone.
Yeah. I was like, what? Shit. Yeah, because everything else, like everything's unlocked, like Project Justice, all the unlockable characters are already unlocked, which is fine because it's a grind to get Burning Batsu. But yeah, it's great. I thought I owned Capcom Fighting Collection 1, but I don't know what I own it on. I think I might have reviewed that for SML Podcast. So I might have it on like Xbox, but I got to get a Switch version of that just to have a physical all on there copy that, cause that was the thing. These games you couldn't get in any way, shape or these were games. Project Justice. I had to have this on, play it on Dreamcast. That was the only way to do it other than emulating.
Capcom Fighting Collection 1. That was the one that was like Darkstalkers and Red Earth. Right, like that was,
but also Puzzle Fighter
and also Puzzle
and,
Fighter
and Pocket Gen. Fighter were on there, and Hyper Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, right.
But it was very Darkstalkers heavy.
Yeah,
it was mostly a Darkstalkers collection with some other stuff thrown in there. So that one is the weakest of the three for sure, but it's one that I want to own just to have those games convenient.
I think I have that too. Yeah, I think I picked that up.
Yeah, and then there's Capcom Beat 'Em Up Collection, which is other games.
Yeah,
like which I did not get yet. But
yeah, the other stuff I was thinking about. Had another go around with Vampire Survivors. You might have heard of this game, this Vampire Survivors game. Well, they did a big free update, which featured like Saga Frontier content.
Oh, okay.
From it's a Saga game which came out last year. Yep. This is like my least favorite stuff that's in the game.
That's fair.
I don't like the characters or I don't like it's the weapons. It's just like the weapons that those characters come with. There's some interesting things going on with like you can have a party of characters because, you know, it's an RPG that it's based on. But I there might just be some things I don't understand, but I'm frustrated by like the weapon unlocks because like characters will have different versions of themselves that have different weapons you need to unlock. And it's just not where I just rather keep playing Castlevania.
Yeah.
Cause there is so much shit in that Castlevania DLC. I still have dozens of characters to unlock. And I know some of them are just like, oh, the sprite is in here, so we're going to make it playable and give it a weapon and whatever.
Heck yeah.
I mean, yeah,
but yeah, that's fine. I want to play as some of those random ass things that
you do
in there. Yeah. But yeah. I'm still mostly playing. I very much appreciate that game has as unlockable characters as Jonathan and Charlotte
and Charlotte,
but then Jonathan and Charlotte and then Charlotte and Jonathan.
Oh, that's great.
And the description of those characters is just Charlotte, Jonathan, Charlotte, Jonathan, Jonathan, Charlotte. So like it has them individually and as pairs in both orders. Wonderful. And that's just the kind of attention to detail that DLC has that I love and appreciate.
Oh, bless
it. Yeah.
I still got to get that Castlevania Advance collection. Still waiting for super sale on that
at some point.
Yeah, just to play Aria mostly, but
and then other than that, it's just like I'm trying to find TV time to play Expedition 33.
You have I assumed that you would have plowed through it by now.
If I had time, I'm sure I could play it on if I had it on Steam Deck, I'm sure I would have plowed through it by now. Yeah. But no, I'm still, you know, I get to. trying, but if I had had more time, I surely would have. But yeah, I'm like 25-30 hours in now. I think I'm towards the end of Act 2. Yeah, that game's fucking fantastic. They just it's really good. It gives me the feeling that I used to have playing Final Fantasy games. Kind of before. Yeah, like going
that's a big one.
Yeah, and I'm not the only person that said that, I really get it. It feels like a PlayStation era Final Fantasy game.
PlayStation era.
Yeah, that, to me, I guess. I don't know.
He said derisively.
No. It's all. It's a good thing where it's like, oh, just kind of, it just kind of kept building on that, where it's like, oh, you go through, you know, at first, like, I'm going through this area and it's kind of like linear-ish, and I'm kind of like, oh, maybe this is going to be a bit like Final Fantasy 13, where it's just like a big corridor, but then it spits you out and you're in like an actual, like, fucking overworld, not an open world, but an overworld where, like, you know, the size is kind of skewed. There's just like a couple enemy encounters. There's like things to go around and explore, but it's not this big expansive thing like in like a Final Fantasy 12 or 15 or, you know, 7 remake at this point, where, you know, you're just going over just all this space with all this shit in it. It's like, no, it's an overworld. There are points of interest. There are things to explore and discover, and it looks amazing. And I'm like, God, this is so cool. Why did RPGs stop doing this? It became a thing where it's either this huge open world, or it's like you go point to point, like you do in like a Persona or Metaphor or whatever. It's like, no, this has a world that you traverse. And then it's like, oh, I have a traversal method. I can go over water now. I can now go and where does this let me explore now? Where can I poke my head into? And then you get another ability. It's like, oh, now I can break down these coral reefs, or I could break down this thing. So now it's like, okay, now I can start exploring over here. What's over here? Oh, there's some enemies that will absolutely kill me. There's like a little extra area over here that I can explore to, you know, level up, get some more items and stuff like that. You know, the whole thing, you know, the whole premise of the game is that, like, over, you know, you're on this island way over on the far side of the world. There's this giant pillar with a number written on it that, like, every year this giant woman called the Paintress, like, stands up and paints a new number on it. Like, I can just see her now because I'm on the north end of the map, and like, she, like, I'm right there. Like, and just seeing that, it was like, wow, that's like kind of like a super cool moment that I could just.
There's a sense of scale that there. To it, that.
Yeah, like a sense of scale to it. And the world is so weird. But then it's like everything that they have you doing, like the combat and moving around, is like so snappy and feels so good. And like the parry triggers and dodging, and like it's almost a little bit too much to keep track of. But I feel like the indicators in battle are good. And like each character is unique and has their own skills. There's like all kinds of customization you can do. You know,
you
each character
can. This... I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt. You are playing this on Xbox, because it's on Game
Pass? Yeah. Yeah.
Is it streamable to a portable device? Like, what would that experience be for you?
Probably a step down, because it's just so freaking... So I bet you that would be a problem because of the timing in the battles. Oh. Like, that little bit of lag might be a problem.
Okay.
I could try it, but... I don't want, you know, it's kind of a game I want to experience on a large TV with it, as big and flashy as it is. I feel like something would be lost, especially now when I'm kind of, I feel like I'm getting on to towards the end of it, that, you know, just finish it out at this point. Each character's, there's like so much customization you can do. Like each character, you know, they have these things called Pictos, which are ostensibly accessories, but like once you use one for a few battles, like, you get that ability separate, which you can just, like, each character has a pool of, like, points, and each one of those abilities costs a certain number of points to equip, so you can do all this customization, and, like, they give you, like, a lot of space to do that. So, of course, there's people going overboard, making insane, like, overpowered one-hit kill builds with the characters, but that's great! That's awesome that, like, you can do that stuff and be creative with it. And then just like the whole story and setting and mood and the characters are all like very good and very well voice acted. And it's just this crazy, insane thing that, like, you know, these are people that just left Ubisoft to make their own game. And
they made a Final Fantasy.
They knocked it out. They knocked it out of the freaking park. Like, and I saw like a quote from the game director. He's just like, this could have gone very, very badly. Like, it could have fallen flat on its face, but it's really resonated with people. And again, like, the guy who did the music is just some dude they found on SoundCloud. like whatever. The game is really popping off. Probably front runner for game of the year right now. It's nice. It's great. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, just the universal acclaim that this game has gotten, and the fact that this is maybe the first RPG that's come out in a long time that actually I might stick with. I might not bounce right off of, because so many people have said, like, this appeals in the same way that older Final Fantasies did. That phrase specifically, that it just has me like, oh, man.
Yeah. It's well paced. It's just like, there hasn't been any parts where I'm just like, oof, that took a while to get through. Yeah. You know, that was a little bit dry. It's just like, no, it just keeps moving. There's cool stuff going on. Like, there's intrigue in the story. Like, there's characters that are funny, and there's weird stuff in there too. Cause there's these little race of, characters that kind of live out there in the world that just like, you know, they have little mini games set up on beaches in places out in the world that, like, you know, just cause they're just a bunch of freaking weirdos. So yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's tremendous. So I'll probably,
it's fine. Don't think about it.
Yeah, no, but it gives a place for that. I think that levity and kind of strange mini games that you want in an RPG. Like, you want that, you want your weird little snowboard mini games or chocobo racing or whatever. And it's like, oh, here's like a little platforming challenge, and here's a race, and then here's like this volleyball mini game or whatever.
You want personality, you want point of view. Like even with it was Double Fine's 20th anniversary, so they've been doing a lot of stuff. So I've been obviously eating up all their videos and all that. And as I was weirdly talking about Full Throttle the last like couple months, they just put up like an article, because it was just the, I think it was the 25th, if that was the 20th of Double Fine anniversary of Full Throttle. But like they had a very fun article on Double Fine about like tracking down the actual release date of Full Throttle, because they didn't know. they literally didn't know. That. Yeah. It's a nice nostalgia like run of just sort of like, yeah, those dates were so all over the place. Yeah. You kind of just had to figure it out. Yeah. But you know, like leaving the assured thing that was boring to strike out on your own, I feel like when it works is the best thing, right? Mm-hmm.
it's probably pretty good. And this game, I don't even think is full price, which is insane.
Yeah. About $50 but, on sale.
Yeah, it's like $50. Like, yeah, like this, the two games that have popped off the most this year, like Blueprints and this, which are, you know, kind of mid level, they're not the highest budget of games. And that's for games to survive. They have to stop spending that much and squeezing the life out of people. And it's good.
It's good. It's positive.
Yeah. Also, I would be remiss not to mention, at least out loud, that there is a encouraged boycott of Microsoft going on right now. Okay. And Disney, I think. But yeah, all just kind of, for Microsoft specifically, just kind of given their support of Israel. Gotcha. People have been encouraged, you know, don't buy Microsoft games, cancel your Game Pass subscription and whatnot. But I am not canceling my Game Pass subscription, because I have the old depreciated level of Game Pass.
Right.
If I do, I will never get it back. And I, you know, do my best to boycott other companies and support Palestine in other ways, which is hard.
Consumption under capitalism, brother.
You do your
best. The more ethical than not. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just
like, I won't buy stuff on Amazon, but eventually I'll end up buying a thing on Amazon.
Every now and then I got to get something off of Amazon. You can't avoid it, because it's everywhere. All the money trickles up and then out and support something that is horrific. but I just felt the need to just kind of say that.
Yeah, no, that's good. I'm glad you threw that out there. I didn't even know about that one.
Aware.
Like, yeah. I just think of The Last of Us. Like, not to be like, I tie that with Israel Palestine, but sorry.
Yeah.
I guess I do.
Yeah, well, on that note, Dave, you played the other great video games?
No, no, I have not. Okay. I also have had no time this month. I opened a show and then was asked to audition for something in the next season, and they kind of hired me right away as soon as I had to spend a lot of time like learning songs and then singing them to audition. I will be playing Captain Hook in Finding Neverland this fall at OFC Creations. it's not literally Captain Hook. I've never saw the Johnny Depp movie. But there's there is an American theater producer that playwright J.M. Barrie worked with in producing Peter Pan originally. And this role was played by, here he comes again, Kelsey Grammer on Broadway. Hey. So and so I had to listen to a lot of Kelsey Grammer singing. And when he does Captain Hook, it's great. It's just he's in full on Sideshow Bob mode. And so I was really channeling that, and so that's I'll be spending my fall back on the stage playing that part. I have no time to play. Just been, as I said, sneaking in as many Capcom games on that fighting collection too as I could, and just trying to reacquaint myself with those, because Tim, I saw that you had reviewed it for the SML podcast, figured we'd be talking about it. And that is all I've had time to play.
Coming up, obviously, so okay, update here, Switch 2 now is coming out next week.
Woo!
That showed up. That snuck up on us.
Hoo boy.
The person that bought it.
Or bought two of them, right, Dave?
Two of them, maybe.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. I had purchased the one through Walmart, or I had pre-ordered the one through Walmart. And then like a week or two later, I got the email from Nintendo that said, hey, you can pre-order Switch 2 now. And I was like, well, I guess I'll just do it just in case something happens with the Walmart one, which I don't trust Walmart. But I've heard they're pretty reliable, but just in case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You never know.
And then I was So we'll see where that other Switch ends up.
Tim is alluding to the fact that that other Switch could end up being my birthday / Father's Day present this year from my wife and kids. So they agreed to it. I ran it past them. They're fine with it. It means they don't have to make a mad dash at shopping for dad for Father's Day, like while their school year is ending.
I consider just bringing it to Janet directly, but I was like, I'll just float it past him and see
what he does.
You deal with it.
She never has time to shop for me. I have all the time in the world to shop for her birthday because our birthday is at the same time, 4 days apart. But like it's the end of her school year and she just does not have time. She's got stuff in the day. Evening.
It is a busy, busy month coming up. But hopefully programming
this saves her a little time.
Note. Yeah. End of June can be very busy. Dave, do you like vacation early July? And now we're like scheduling here, but like we have discussed doing a kind of mid-year special episode of a top. Dave, you're on the texts. I don't know why you're ooing.
Did we start throwing out dates?
No, we didn't start throwing out dates. We don't have to do that yet. We're not going to do that yet, but I'm throwing it out for the listeners.
Oh, great.
Programming note. Yeah, we talked about doing kind of a mid-year special and doing a revisit of our top 10 games of all time, which there's at least one person that is like, I mentioned it offhand a few years ago, or they asked about us doing it. And I said, we might get to it at some point. And then they asked again, and I was like, at some point. We had this idea of kind of doing a mid-year tent pole opposite the blank of the year, which is at the end of the year. I guess I'm just not sure at this point whether we do it at the end of June or we do it in July or what. But we can figure that out. So either the next episode or the one after that is probably going to be a bit of a whopper and also fun to record. So, I was just thinking to myself, like, we were going to do that in June, but boy, the end of June is tough. So we might just have to do it. Normal episode if we can even squeeze that in. That is one of the roughest times of year. I think getting in the June and August episodes are the most difficult because of how lives revolve around school years very heavily on this podcast.
I was going to say my schedule is about the same for both, which is, as I told you, already going to be scheduling hell. But
so we'll see. keep an eye on, I guess, me on Blue Sky. If you haven't already, I think I'm Ekibus at Blue Sky on there. Easy to find. That's mostly where I post things these days. Certainly not on Facebook. definitely not on Twitter. And not just because, I don't go to those
places. One I killed off. Facebook I still have just in case. But
yeah, there's like a reason or two why I just, anytime I open Twitter and I'm just like, oh, I got a notification of a bot liking a post I made like 6, 7, 8 months ago, whenever it was I left it. Just like, okay, cool, whatever.
That one felt really good to get rid of. Like I will say, like that was a clean kill.
I wish I could kill it. I can't kill it yet because I will have stuff to drop to the Brawl Stars community. All right, this is a bit of a spoiler, but I think I can say it. I had a recording session for Brawl Stars a couple of days ago, and it was a recording session with some of the other actors from the game, which has never happened before. So that was cool for me to get to like interact with them. And at the end of the call, we were all like, hey, yeah, we love being part of the game and whatnot. And the director on the call was like, we love when you actors interact with the fans on social media. You know, it helps you. It helps us. It's good for everybody. Please keep doing it. And you know, she said, do you, you know, how much do you interact? And I had to say, like, I used to interact with them a lot on Twitter. Like, that's where most of them seem to be, is on Twitter. I stopped. This is what I said on the call. I stopped posting to Twitter earlier this year for reasons, for commonly known and commonly shared reasons. Yeah. And they were all like nodding in agreement. Like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, good. And that's when the director said, you should get on TikTok. So now I'm like, I don't know. I can't learn another thing. And the pressure of making video content is like,
that's harder. That's a way more difficult thing in my opinion. Cause something that I have been staring at for Super VGM Melee to do like little video game guessing game things on there. But just like, I'm sure once I got going, it would become easy, but it just feels like, God, I'm so, not to be an old man, but not familiar with,
TikTok. I think more for Tim than Dave, but like old advice I got was just to like lean into the one that you're going to use. Cause otherwise it's just like a job, a fight, you know? Yeah, a job. Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's good advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. But anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. Yeah. So watch out for something special coming in one of the next two episodes. And also next episode, like, you know, the Switch 2 is going to be hot. So we'll, you know, I'm sure we'll want to talk. But also, if we wait two episodes to talk Switch 2, then Bonanza will be out. Is that what that one is? The Donkey Kong
Bonanza? That one comes out early July, right?
That comes out in early July. So there would be the other game out there. But thank you for listening. We'll catch y'all later. And
bye.
Bye.